Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I considered recording today's program with a litany of Impeach Trump, as not only its theme, but its entire 30-minute broadcast. Instead, I start this rant with bitter anger that one of my closest and lifelong friends I served with in Vietnam is being denied fiscal and physical restitution from the USMC for his claim of being mortally sickened from the literal stench of war by the miscalculation of locating toilets known as heads to the naval services, which the USMC we were both members of are a part of, and the daily downwind exposure he and many other Marines suffered during their war tours, which seems a bitter joke that his life is now threatened by the literal stench of humanity's penchant for warfare. The Veterans Administration does not recognize the life-threatening results from the incessant exposure to the war's biological byproducts. And now, by V, who was formerly Eve Ensler, we do not comply. How do we disrupt the momentum of Trump's cruelty? And she wrote this for The Guardian. The exterminating force of Project 2025 is plowing through the culture, the government, and people's hearts and bodies like a drunk on a violent tear. We wake each morning holding our breath to bear witness to the new devastation. PBS and NPR defunded. Cuts to the fight against human trafficking. Medicaid gone for millions. ICE working to surveil critics. Tons of food for the poor ordered, burned, and wasted. The momentum of cruelty always feels inevitable. Cruelty is by definition a callous indifference to or pleasure in causing pain, quote unquote. For those of us who have suffered physical, political, racial, and emotional abuse, it feels like a familiar steamroller of violence. We only have to witness the cries of parents being separated from their children, men screaming out for libertad from cages in Everglades Detention Center, ACA, also known as Alligator Alcatraz, nonviolent protesters beaten for trying to stop a genocide to be frozen in that same incapacitated dread and fear. What is the antidote to this destructive environment of mendacity possessing us now with fear, ennui, and self-mutilating rage? Ashley Woodard Henderson, a powerhouse activist and brilliant organizer, told me, "It's not decided where we go yet, which is why it feels tense. What we know is that there's no going back to an old normal, because our economic system has failed us and our governmental structure is being destroyed. They are trying to replace what was with this minority rule of disgustingly wealthy humans dictating what can happen not only in this country, but globally. We gotta block and build at the same time," she says. "That means confronting both elected officials and the corporations that are lifting them up. We need to make sure that we are gumming up their ability to successfully implement any sort of action, whether it's policy or otherwise, that takes more power and rights and access to life-saving resources away from our communities. And that's a quote. So how do we gum up their momentum? How do we become refusers, artists of disruption, interrupters of their hateful and life-destroying trajectory? How do we clear the noise and fear in our heads so that we are able to hear the call of our inner morality? The thing that I love about being non-cooperative and non-compliant with the Trump administration, Ashley told me, is its accessibility. People have all sorts of abilities, all sorts of means, regardless of class, regardless of identity, to find a tactic that fits for them. What keeps you up at night enough to make you active? Trump says we shouldn't ask people for warrants. We demand warrants. When a business puts a No Kings sign up or a No ICE sign in their windows, they are not complying. And we need more people to do that wherever they are, she said. Whether it's a general saying, I'm not going to command my troops to do this, whether it's troops becoming conscientious objectors, whether it's us boycotting Target and T-Mobile, quote, unquote. This tyrannical white supremacist landscape is erasing our sense of existence and meaning. Daily forms of rebellion birth us back into our bodies and our purpose. Non-compliance is art, as art is meant to defy the status quo, question the givens, expand the boundaries of knowing and freedom. And as you courageously make your mark of refusal, you carve a path for others to be brave. Non-compliance is praxis, stretching and transforming the muscles of our discontent into impactful and embodied action. There are a multitude of ways that we can make their lives miserable by taking small risks and huge ones, like folks in California sitting in their cars outside the hotels where the ICE agents are and just lying on their horn for hours, or people towing ICE vans away that are parked illegally. And non-complying is also filling in the gaps of resources and care that they are taking away. They are already closing rural hospitals where we live because our governor did not expand Medicaid, Ashley told me. So residents must build an alternative like country people and black folks across the country have been doing on their own accord for decades, if not centuries, creating community spaces where we can both line dance, do some boots on the ground organizing, get your blood pressure checked, get your mammogram in the mobile unit, get your teeth cleaned, whatever. All of those things are not complying. And that's a quote. I think of the man who suggested we all dress in ICE suits with masks and Oakley sunglasses and enter detention centers and free immigrants. Or my white British friend who was in a store in Nevada when ICE invaded and they started harassing Latinos for their identification. My friend stepped up and calmly asked why they were not asking for his ID. He asked simply without hostility. He asked it three times. Even though they continued, he momentarily disrupted the trajectory of cruelty and forced them to bring consciousness to what they were doing. Or the Reverend Marianne Buds staring down Trump and his billionaire cronies in the first row of a Washington church in January, calmly and fearlessly demanding compassion for immigrants, refugees, and LGBTQ plus communities. And this is the time for artists to speak out, to disembed themselves from a fascist system, to place principles over profit and self-advancement, to be what Viet Thanh Nguyen calls disagreeable, quote unquote. Yes, there are risks. But at this moment, with the jackboots in the streets and at our door, when each hour another liberty is being erased, and those who speak truth to power are being removed from television, from universities, from cultural centers, when the cultural platforms are being removed themselves, speaking out is not just an obligation, it is survival. And there are artists beginning to organize. The poet Michael Klein is creating a new podcast calling writers, quote, to take our language back in writing away through the various veils of deceit, an act which in itself has always been a form of resistance, unquote. Mina Jagnoff, a movement lawyer, is gathering artists and activists in salons to deepen our collective investigation and imaginative co-creation. She told me, our charge in these times is to support each other in building protagonism, a sense that we have agency to contest fascist narratives about how the world is and should be. It needs to be a collective, creative, and responsive process that takes in what's going out there and alchemizes it into a more expansive imagination of what could and should be, unquote. So in a nod to the great Mary Oliver, I ask you, what is the one precious, wild, creative act you are doing to impede this nightmare? And that was, we do not comply. How do we disrupt the momentum of Trump's cruelty? By V, formerly Eve Ensler, who is a playwright and activist and the founder of V-Day, a global movement to end violence against women and girls. And now, by Maya Yang, from U.S. News. U.S. placed on rights watch list over health of its civil society under Trump. International nonprofit Civicus says sustained attacks on civic freedoms put the United States on par with El Salvador and Kenya. A group of global civil society organizations have placed the United States on a watch list for urgent concern over the health of its civic society, alongside Turkey, Serbia, El Salvador, Indonesia, and Kenya. On Wednesday, a new report released by the nonprofit Civicus placed the U.S. on its watch list following, quote, sustained attacks on civic freedoms, unquote, across the country, according to the group. Civicus pointed to three major issues, including the deployment of military to quell protests, growing restrictions placed on journalists and civil society, as well as the aggressive targeting of anti-war advocates surrounding Palestine. At Civicus, countries are assigned a rating over their civic space conditions. The ratings include open, narrowed, obstructed, repressed, and closed. The group has declared the U.S.'s civic space as narrowed. According to the group, the narrowed rating is for countries that still allow individuals and civil society organizations to exercise their rights to freedom of association, peaceful assembly, and expression, but where violations of these rights still take place. People can form associations to pursue a wide range of interests, but full enjoyment of this right is impeded by occasional harassment, arrest, or assault of people deemed critical of those in power, the rating description says, adding, protests are conducted peacefully, although authorities sometimes deny permission, citing security concerns and excessive force, which may include tear gas and rubber bullets, are sometimes used against peaceful demonstrators, unquote. With regard to the media, countries with a narrowed rating allow media to, quote, disseminate a wide range of information, although the state undermines complete press freedom either through strict regulation or by exerting political pressure on media owners, unquote. The United States appears to be sliding deeper into the quicksands of authoritarianism. Peaceful protests are confronted with military force. Critics are treated as criminals. Journalists are targeted, and support for civil society and international cooperation have been cut back. Mandeep Tiwana, Civicus's Secretary General, said in a statement. 6 months into Donald Trump's second term, a bizarre assault on fundamental freedoms and constitutional safeguards has become the new normal, he added. Pointing to Trump's deployment of Marines and National Guard troops to California in June in response to the widespread protests against immigration raids, Tijuana said, this level of militarization sets a dangerous precedent. It's a line that democratically elected leaders are not meant to cross, quote, unquote. Tijuana pointed to the Trump administration's latest attacks against media networks, including funding restrictions on public broadcast stations, including PBS and NPR. What they are trying to do is actually defund critical news sources and deny American people the ability to receive truthful, nonpartisan reporting by pulling their funding, Tijuana told the Guardian newspaper. In its report, Civicus also warned of the growing criminalization of peaceful advocacy, adding that, quote, authorities have continued reprisals against activists expressing solidarity with Palestinian rights, unquote. Citing the Trump administration's clampdown on foreign-born student activists, including Mahmoud Khalil, Mohsen Madawi, and Rum Saya Ozturk, as well as sanctioning of Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur for the West Bank and Gaza, Tijuana said, we are seeing a wide-ranging attack on civic space in the United States by the federal and some state governments. Authorities in the U.S. should reverse course from the present undemocratic path by guaranteeing everyone's First Amendment right to organize and dissent legitimately, quote, unquote. And that was U.S. placed on rights watch list over health of its civil society under Trump, and was written by Maya Yang. And now, how do we lead moral lives in an age of bullies? By Robert Reich. In my lifetime, I have witnessed a shift from support of decency, of tolerance, to cruelty. Where do we go from here? Those with power are less constrained today than they have been in my lifetime, since the end of the Second World War. The question is, how do we lead moral lives in this era? Vladimir Putin launches a horrendous war on Ukraine. After Hamas's atrocity, Benjamin Netanyahu bombs Gaza to smithereens and is now starving to death its remaining occupants. Donald Trump abducts thousands of hardworking people within the United States and puts them into detention camps, splitting their families, spreading fear. His immigration agents are accused of targeting people with brown skin. He usurps the power of Congress, defies the courts, and prosecutes his enemies. He and his Republican lackeys cut Medicaid and food stamps, lifelines for poor people, including millions of children, so the wealthy can get a tax break. Women must have full control over their bodies, including access to safe abortions. Police who kill innocent people of color must be brought to justice. Immigration agents must be prohibited from abducting people off the streets or from their homes or courthouses or places of work. CEOs who treat their employees like manure must be exposed and penalized. Billionaires who bribe lawmakers to cut their taxes or exempt them from regulations must be sanctioned, as should lawmakers who accept such bribes. This is not a matter of left or right. It's a matter of what's right. Having a moral life in an age of bullies requires collective action. It cannot be done alone. Each of us must organize and participate in a vast network of moral resistance. This is what civilization demands. It's what the struggle for social justice requires. It's why that struggle is so critical today, and why we all must be a part of it. And that was, How Do We Lead Moral Lives in an Age of Bullies, by Robert Reich, who is a former U.S. Secretary of Labor, is a professor of public policy emeritus at the University of California, Berkeley. He is a Guardian U.S. columnist. His newsletter is at robertreich.substack.com. His next book, Coming Up Short, A Memoir of My America, will be out on August 5th. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. I personally believe that Donald Trump should be tried for treason to democracy and his blatant desire to turn the USA into a Trumpocracy. And thus, July, the birth month, so to speak, of American democracy, ends with a perplexing question still on the minds of true patriots. Is Trump president for the single reason that his presidential opponent was a woman? If so, then perhaps we deserve him and his department of stupid and venal. Happy Midsummer, USA, 2025.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on The Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.